This is Bronson Fry with the Alaska Associated General Contractors Build Alaska Legacy podcast. Honored today to be interviewing Mr. Michael Garrity. How are you doing today, Michael?
Fine, Bronson.
Thanks for making the time to join us. So you are currently with Olds, Morrison, Rinker & Baker as a partner there doing construction law. Is that right?
That's correct. Construction law and commercial litigation and related tasks, but basically that's the thrust of it.
All right. And how long have you been in Alaska?
I was born here in Fairbanks in 1952 and educated here. Went to college at the University of Hawaii and graduated there in 1974, and then took a year off and went to law school. Graduated June of 1978, I believe, and then I've been licensed and practicing law in Alaska since November of 1978.
All right. And do you have a background in construction as well?
Well, my father was a contractor with several partners, but he was born in Fairbanks in 1917.
Wow.
And so our family goes way back in the interior. My grandmother, my dad's mother, her name was Nugget Hudson. And actually, we have a book at home, but she was, when I was growing up, she was reputed to have been the first white woman born north of the Arctic Circle, which was kind of passed down the family. But we have a book at home, actually, that traces her family tree. She comes from a rather old family, it's a thick book. It's through many, many generations. But
right.
This book actually mentions that as well, that same fact. She was born, I think technically it was in Canada, but it was in a mining camp, and her name was Nugget,
was
her Christian name. So anyway, my family goes way back, and my dad started a construction business with some of his Fairbanks kids, the guys he grew up with and went to school with, and so they had it was called Gem Company, GHEMM was the name of the company, but they were successful and contractor in the interior. They did a lot of work for the Corps of Engineers and did a lot of joint venture work.
Mm-hmm.
They built the Susitna Bridge here on the Parks Highway, built the Yukon River Bridge.
No kidding.
Which was a joint venture with Manson Osberg Gem.
All right.
The Salcha River Bridge outside of Fairbanks and some other smaller bridges. So and just a lot of heavy civil work, but primarily in the Northern District, for the DOT and
sure.
for the Corps of Engineers. But
I grew
up working construction,
mm-hmm.
Operating equipment, and the other owners were. Started out as Carl Heflinger was the H in Jump Company, and mm-hmm. Carl Erickson was the E. Harvey Marlin was one of the M's, and Bob Mitchell was the other M.
Okay.
So they were all fairly well-known businessmen in Fairbanks and civic-minded people, kind of an old throwback. But they developed a lot of real estate and property in Fairbanks as well. Mitchell Expressway in Fairbanks is named after Bob Mitchell. And so they were, and the kids, offspring of the owners, by and large worked there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, Bob Mitchell made a practice of hiring some other kids as well, compatriots of his son, Greg. And so, and many of them are, still in Fairbanks. They've gone on to successful careers in politics or the state senate and successful businessmen. But they all, if you talk to them, they all, give credit to Bob Mitchell for getting him started and teaching him a work mm-hmm. ethic and the importance of that. And I worked for Bob myself growing up, so it was a different time. But they were a successful contractor. So that's how I got my interest
gotcha.
In construction is just something I did and worked on growing up.
Right.
In my practice, so my law practice encompassed a lot of different things and not just construction. Construction has been a more significant part of my practice, primarily since I left state government. But it is something I grew up doing and working around, and so it's a good background if you want to get in that line of work.
Yeah, outstanding. Sounds like some pretty interesting projects that you're growing up around and involved with.
Well, they were. For GEMCO, I didn't work on all this, but I did work on the Yukon River Bridge. I went up there twice.
Wow.
I think I was on, went up there, I know in the summertime, one time, ran a batch plant. They were pouring some of the big piers in the river. And I went up there another time in the winter, I think maybe over Christmas break when I was in college. I'd have to, who remembers? But and then some of the other projects, I worked in Galena, spent 3 summers working in Galena. They put in the, working on the runway there, and they put in the road to the new village of Galena because they kept getting flooded out. And so projects like that. So I did work out in the bush, which is where most of their work was, out in the bush. So I did my Healy. They did a bunch of work in Healy, Alaska. So, I spent a lot of time working on a lot of projects.
Now, when you were in law school, did you know that you wanted to sort of specialize in construction law, or was that just a natural direction to go, given your background?
Well, I didn't know. I certainly aware of it at the time. Of course, in law school, you just want to finish law school and get the basic training to be a lawyer and to pass a bar exam. Back at that time, well, and it's still true, Alaska's a small state, and it's hard to come out and say I'm going to specialize in construction law, for example, because there's just not that much stuff going on. At that time, back in the early days, there was several attorneys in Seattle that were coming up here and were doing the bulk of the construction law. So I met some of those guys, and over the years, we're getting more and more exposure to that and getting more opportunities to do it. But as I said, I did many other things too, tried other kinds of cases, so I didn't specialize in that. And even today, I wouldn't say I specialize in it, but it is the predominant portion of my practice.
Now, you mentioned a little bit ago that you were in state government as well. What role did you have there?
Well, I was in 2012, I was approached by Governor Parnell to see if I'd be interested in serving as Attorney General for the state. And
wow.
I had been practicing law at that point for a little over 30 years. And it was quite a pay cut, but I've always been somewhat interested in that side of the public service, state government. And so it was an opportunity, and I decided to take it. It was confirmed by the legislature and served for 3 years until the election in 2014, of course, when Governor Parnell was lost to Governor Walker. And at that point, I had an opportunity to continue in state government, but I really wasn't. I wasn't going to be able to do it in the Department of Law, and I really wasn't interested in becoming a state bureaucrat or doing something else, and so I went back to the private practice. But it was a fantastic opportunity, great job, great people, very challenging issues, I'm working with legislators, working with the governor, other commissioners, met some great people, and as I said, it was a real pay cut. It's a bit of a financial sacrifice, but I think it's public service. That's the whole idea. So but it was a great experience, and I'm fortunate to have had the opportunity.
So, given your perspective, having spent both time in government as the Attorney General for Alaska, and also spending a lot of time in construction law. Well, where do you see the construction industry heading? What's your best guess or opinions on what you see when you look around Alaska now?
Well, I'm an optimist by nature. I think, the state, I think, and the federal government are, you know, the big drivers of construction up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need a prosperous state government and capital budgets and stuff like that to drive the industry. And the federal government needs to do its share. We've got enough of a military presence up here, I think, that and we see that going on right now with the new deployments up in Fairbanks.
Sure.
And so I think that will always, I hope that will always be a mainstay, but I believe it will be. I mean, the federal government owns 60% of the state, so they have,
mm-hmm.
you know, a substantial responsibility to take care of the state properly and to maintain
mm-hmm.
their resources up here, their assets up here and so on, and to replace stuff when it gets old and upgrade stuff. And so I think I'm an optimist about it. I think the industry's been through some hard times, and
mm-hmm.
we're going through a bit of one right now. But
mm-hmm.
I'm an optimist. I think it'll come around, and the future's bright.
I like to hear that. I, too, find myself an eternal optimist, to a fault.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But it's a good way to go through life in general, I think. And I appreciate hearing your perspective, given your background. What are some ways you've seen the construction industry change over the time that you've been here, which basically your whole life?
Well, I've been, when I was younger and during the early years of my practice and stuff, of course, I wasn't that tied as close to the construction industry
as I
am now. But I watched my dad's company and continue to work. I'd say the major... I think there's more competition.
Hmm.
I think there's, I don't know about the metrics, but my guess is, my suspicion is that there's more litigation, more claims associated with construction now than there used to be. I know from my dad's company, I mean, again, I was young and uninformed at the time, and I never did sit around and ask them about claims or lawsuits and stuff like that. But I know from the contact I did have that they were not very litigious. I mean, they mm-hmm. worked things out. They were fair and good to their subs. They were a union contractor. And I just, you know, from what little I can remember, they resolved things. They got them done. And even if they... compromised or took a loss or something like that, they were well respected
mm-hmm.
By their peers and people I think liked to work for them generally, and they had a number of really long time employees who stayed with them
mm-hmm.
and you know that doesn't happen unless you're treating people right, and I think
right.
that goes for owners, it goes for subcontractors as well. I mean, these were fundamentally good men and did things the right way, and I think it rebounded to their benefit. But I think I'm not so sure nowadays that model still has currency. I think it does. I think mm-hmm. the industry is still predominantly good, fair, honest people. But it's I do believe there's probably more claims going on today than there was 30, 40 years ago, and there could be a lot of reasons for that, but beyond that, I don't know that I'm, you know, certainly technology's played a part, I think, in the industry. You see more
mm-hmm.
better tools, better equipment. You know, I used to run a grader on some of these jobs when I was growing up, and then now I see these laser controls on graders and stuff like that to
right.
control everything. It just, the technology has been remarkable.
That's true.
Thing, I'm on the outside looking in, but just what little I see, there's been some remarkable strides, improvements.
So given that there might be more lawsuits now, or maybe that's just a trend everywhere, but in the construction industry, and as an attorney specializes more or less in that area nowadays anyway, what's one piece of advice, the one thing you would tell a construction contractor out there from your perspective, just... what is one thing they should be doing?
Well, you know, I teach construction a lot at the university here in Anchorage, and so I tell my students, and it's just one course. I teach a course, you know, two nights a week, so it's not like I'm you know, all things to all people, but I advise my students that, you know, the best way to stay out of claims is through honest and frank communications and through you know, using good judgment. Do your due diligence. If you're a sub, do due diligence on the primes that you're looking to submit bids with. Mm-hmm. If you're a prime, do some due diligence on the subs that you're looking to do business with. Don't always take the cheapest or the lowest bid. Mm-hmm. You know, penny wise and pound foolish sometimes, but you know, you can get a low bid, but doing business with an outfit that's honest and fair, that's priceless. You know, if you can have that, if people who stand behind their mistakes, stand behind their company, are forthright and they're willing to admit when mistakes are made, and to do things right. I mean, I just think that's the key to it. And it's no, that's not a great insight. I mean, that's a solution for many problems, I think, that plague our society, is just open and candid communications and using good judgment. So it's easy to say, but I truly believe in that. And I think, you know, there's a legacy of successful contractors to show that that's the truth.
Have you experienced examples in your own time or life where open and honest and clear communication has helped avoid some sort of litigation or problem?
Well, I'm sure I have. It would be hard-pressed to call up specifics of Bronson, and I don't want to, you know, I'm bound by an attorney-client privilege, and I can't really bare my soul when it comes to stuff like that. But I do think many successful, I'm fortunate enough to represent some big successful contractors, and I find those traits in them.
I see.
That they're honest, they're forthright, and a lot of times this happens, you know, without me being involved, without any attorney being involved. That's how they run their business. That's how they interact,
right,
with their subs and their employees and their owners. You know, when there's a problem, then they'll come to me and I'll hear about it. But that's certainly how we try to approach solving the problem, is by,
right.
Sometimes there's too much water in the bridge and you're in a, you are in a claim situation. You're just going to have to do it the hard way. But by and large, I think that's still a model that works. And but I'd be hard pressed here to
fair enough.
Put me on the spot here.
Not for a specific example, but in general, a trait that you see in successful businesses. That's interesting.
I think so, and I think it's, you know, there's a lot of contractors, I'd say in general, tend to be hard chargers, and. You know, they're aggressive, they're hard chargers, you know, they're workaholics. They, you know, it's the most important thing going for them. It's always struck me about construction and contractors in general, but, you know, I think what distinguishes the industry from many others is that contractors were required to get bonds to do their work, performance and payment bonds. And the sureties that provide those bonds require those contractors to sign off and do it on their assets and to agree to indemnify the surety if anything goes wrong and if the surety has to pad any money. So even if you're a corporation, you know, you will be required to personally guarantee those bonds. And so it's a business where, you know, you, as far as I'm concerned, you're putting it on the line all the time. It's not just that, you know, you might lose money or your surety might lose money. You have to personally pay that surety back.
Right.
And that's not all businesses have to do that. I mean, most businesses can do business behind a corporation or an LLC. But contractors, it's a little bit different. You know, I suppose you get so big. If you're a big mega company, maybe that doesn't happen too much. But smaller, I think for this industry, for Alaska, many of these companies are solely owned.
Right.
Or owned by a very small number of individuals. And, you know, you're putting it on the line every day as far as I'm concerned. And I have utmost respect for contractors for that reason, because sure. it's they risk it all,
right,
all the time.
So why not give yourself the best chance of success by communicating openly and honestly and clearly? It seems like that comes up in these interviews, period, more than I would have expected. Yeah.
Well, you think so. Sometimes, you know, you're not. That's not reciprocated by the people you're dealing with. So mm-hmm. the contractors can certainly have those traits, but it's not necessarily reciprocated.
Right.
Either by owners or by subs or other parties, banks. I mean, any number of examples, but all you can control is what you're doing and what you say, and to pursue a solution along those lines. And I think it's still the way to go, but a lot of times it's not reciprocated, so it gets messy.
Very challenging.
Challenging, to say the least.
So, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself at the beginning of your career working in this industry?
Well, looking back, I don't have too many regrets. I mean, I guess I've managed to achieve some level of success. I've managed to keep, you know, maintain my integrity and my reputation in the industry with judges and so on. So I've got... you know, that's fortunate and something, you know, I would also tell young attorneys that, you know, you've only got one, you know, your integrity and your reputation that lives you for life. And so you don't want to do anything to screw that up. And so that's been important to me over the course of 41 years of practice in law. And I think I don't, you know, I'd be hard pressed. I don't have a lot of regrets, and I don't spend a lot of time, frankly, reminiscing about what I would have done differently. But I think I've been fortunate to hook up with good law partners, good people, and you know, you always wonder, gee, could have I done this, could I have done that, and maybe I would have made more money going with this firm or that firm or so on and so forth. I mean, it's just, if you're with good people who are fundamentally honest and treat you fairly, I mean, that is priceless as far as I'm concerned. It's hard to put a dollar sign
right
on something like that. So it's worked out well, and I don't, I'm not sure I've got significant regrets. I've, you know, married well, got one wonderful family, wonderful kids. So I've got a lot to be thankful for.
Good. Well, I like to end on a personal note. So what would be a one... surprising fact about you or a fun fact about yourself that you think is unique?
Well, I'd struggle for that as well. I'm not that unique a person. I don't consider myself.
You seem pretty unique to me.
But our family's been in Harding Lake in Fairbanks. My dad built a cabin out there back in the 60s. And, you know, we've kept it up, obviously, our neighbors was the Frank family. I should mention, for clarity, Carl Heflinger was one of the original owners of GM Company. He sold his interest to Con Frank way back when, in the 60s, I think. And Con, you know, I want to digress to just emphasize that Con was really the brains of the business of GM Company. He was the engineer and did all the bidding for the jobs and stuff like that. So absolutely key guy. And his family ended up with the cabin next to us at Harding Lake. So we've had kind of a close relationship with him. And he's got four kids, and they're all roughly the same age. But so the Harding Lake was always a big... point for us, and when I got married, I went up there with my soon to be wife, but before we even got married, and we've gone to the lake for just ever, and always spent the 4th of July there. And I used to sit on the deck and look across the lake. It's about 3 miles across, and I swim for a workout, and I used to sit there and look at the lake and think, yeah, one day I should try to swim across that. And I said that for years and years and years. And I always would, you know, could talk myself into it. At least talk about it, but I never put on the suit and tried it. But until, I think it was 2013 or 2014, I was serving as AG at the time, and I just got a wild hair. We were out there for our annual 4th of July trip, and got a wild hair and decided I was going to give it a try. So I did, and I made it. It took me about a little under 2 hours. And so, and it takes about 2 hours. So ever since then, I have tried to swim the lake every summer when we're up there. It takes about 2 hours. I'm 67, just turned 67, but I felt good about it, and I'm going to keep doing it until as long as I can. I've got a wetsuit now. My kids got me a wetsuit, so I don't chilled, and it's just one of my kids or my wife usually accompanies me over, you know, in a boat. So that's, I don't know if you call it a fun
that's
fact, but
impressive.
it's an odd fact.
That's a great goal every year to have for yourself.
It is, and it's, exactly. I mean, it's just something I started doing. I was ill last summer and had a bad bug, and I decided not to try just because it does take a lot out of me, and I didn't want to get more sick.
Yeah,
and I,
you know, 2 hours
go back
of
and
swimming.
Go to work. So anyway, I've call that a fun fact or whatever, but
perfect.
That's something I would do, and I'm going to keep doing it as long as I can.
There you go. Outstanding. Sincerely appreciate your time today, sitting down and sharing some of your experience and insight to the construction industry with us. It's real kind of you to make the time for this. Thank you.
Not at all, Bronson. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.